And welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have the director, writer. No, she didn't. I don't know what she did. She's going to tell us. I know she wrote it for sure. And I think she directed it. I'm right. So I did remember. Bring Me an Avocado, Maria May Aya. Did I get it right?
You did!
Yay! I screw up so many people's names, and you'll probably get used to it. Some of them I don't even try. I'm like, I have to say it. So I want to start at the beginning. This feels like very, I don't want to say wholesome because I don't think that's the right word, but very family-oriented film.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Because I don't think it's wholesome. I think it's great. I love the way the family comes together, and I like you throw in some problems.
It's for sure a family drama, I think, right? It's a PG drama. Modern age PG.
I wanted to ask, because it feels very real. Is it based on somebody you know or something you read?
No. So actually, for the film, I wrote the script when my mom got diagnosed with dementia. 2014. And I wrote it because I wanted to kind of, like, I'm not ready to write about dementia. That's, like, really heavy, you know, and it was, like, a very lively experience that I was having. But what struck me so much as, like, an observer was, like, how I was dealing with it and how my family was dealing with it. Because there's, like, a very stark difference in grieving for somebody still, you know? Like, if you have somebody who has, like, terminal illness, you know, it's different when they're here. You're, like, grieving for somebody who's not yet gone. So the routine and, like, normal everyday moments feel weird, right? So it was kind of like I put the mom in a coma to explore the family's experience of grief. So that is, like, its relationship to my reality without having to deal with, like, the actual illness portion of it, right, and focusing on the family's experience.
I get that choice. I'm going to go a little bit spoilery, but I'll try to avoid it. A certain event happens between two people.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that to write? Because I thought that was a weird choice for the characters involved. I really had problems accepting that would happen because I didn't see that. Now, did you put that in just to confuse me, or am I supposed to accept it, or just sort of let it go?
Have to accept, you know, because it's, again, it's like a reaction of just being in trauma and being in grief, right? It isn't actually like a hidden romance that exists between these two people, right? It's just people that are really close and need, like, physical connection and don't really know how to explore it.
Because I felt you were really leading into that earlier, where they have to sit in the steps and she opens the birthday present and the friend is really into it, saying, you know. And I really thought she was kind of being creepy then.
Did she really?
I thought something was going to happen. I really thought there were little tells there that she was into her, just the way she was expressing herself.
How funny. That's the first time I've ever heard that.
But I don't know, because, I mean, I figure you have to have some kind of MacGuffin, so I figured it had to be with her. Because at that point, early on, the mom goes into a coma, so something else has to happen. I realized that at some point.
Totally. I mean, a lot happens, you know, and it's mainly happening to the dad in the story as he's trying to, like, navigate, you know, the rabbit hole of his emotions.
Yeah, I thought it was great. So that's why I was wondering if it was based somewhat on somebody you knew. Maybe this came up because it felt very real to me, everything.
Good. I'm glad.
So I think you did a good job. And I want to discuss your casting process. And I think it was so important for this film to make them look like a family and make Greasy look like a sister. And
right.
Make the friend feel like a friend. So walk me through that whole process, because it's so important to your film.
Totally. Okay, so I'm going to tell you, like, the story of Grease first. Greasy, the sister. She was, like, a fluke of a casting. It was originally a different actress that was cast in the role. And, like, a week before we were going to go into production, that actress backed out. So I was just kind of, like, in a scramble panic because I already had, like, you know, I had everything. We had a hospital lined up to shoot in, you know, and, like, a house, and everything was paid for. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't, like, push this shoot right now. You know, as an independent filmmaker, it would cost me, like, the budget of the entire film. You know, I'd have to start fundraising again to try to push it. So I was just, like, looking manically for, like, actors that kind of looked like my lead. Like, that was, like, my starting point. And Molly Ratterman, who's actually a San Francisco, a Bay Area actress, which is where the film was shot, was in Cannes at the time, like at the film festival. And I like reached out to her and was like, hey, I don't even know if you're going to be around or what your schedule is, you know, but if you're interested in reading the, for this, let me send you a scene. And she was like, yeah, you know what? I'm totally interested in reading for it. So we read over it like this, like in a Google Hangout session. She read for the part with me. And then I was like, listen, you're great. She was amazing. Like, blew me out of the water. Like, and we read like one of the hospital scenes together, yeah, or the scene where she's like with her niece and talking about soccer. We read that one, and her performance was so good that I was like, hey, if you want the part, you know, it's like indie budget, but it's yours. And she flew back early from France to like be in the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And like blew it out of the water. I think she's like one of the most, you know, compelling characters in the film. And it was crazy, like, because I didn't even realize until they were together how similar they look as sisters. Like, they look like they are actually related. And then the daughters, of course, were cast really specifically to, like, look like the characters, right? Both of the daughters are, like, mixed race. They're both, like, Mexican and white. And my character is Latino. He's Bolivian. And obviously, the character that plays Robin is very, very white.
Yes. I don't know. I thought everybody worked well together as a cast. Like, sometimes, you know, somebody stands out. They don't really work. Nah, that's not a real family. It's a movie family, but it's a movie. I let it go. But they really seem to me like a real family. Now, I'm going to jump to the very, very end of the film, and I'll be polite about it again. I won't go into it. The forgiveness scene, I thought, might have needed a little bit more depth for me.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to be, I see where you were going. Like, you didn't, because like, you're doing a family film. I got it. You're not going to go too depth to it.
Totally. I mean, it's unfair. It's interesting because I didn't like not go deeper, because it was a family film. It was more because I don't think that that was like a forgiveness moment entirely.
Okay, yeah. Good. Okay, so I did take it the right way because I thought she kind of let it go a little quick.
Kind of open-ended, right?
Yeah.
Like, like, is still very much trying to figure things out. And what she knows is that she can't figure it all out at once.
Okay.
So she's trying to figure out that small portion first.
Okay, good.
Immediate family.
Okay.
Right? And then whenever she comes back, like, who knows, you know, what's going to happen? Or who knows how that trip, wherever they're going, ends up, right?
Yeah, I think the trip is just an escapism for it. Okay, I've been sitting here for 4 months, or I can't remember how long she's there, and it's time to go somewhere. I need to do something.
Totally. Exactly.
Live my life. And she seems like a very live-your-life kind of person.
Totally. Yeah, when she wakes up, you can kind of feel, like, a certain energy come back into the house, right?
Yes.
Like, she brings that to it, for sure.
And I think that comes from her. Like, if she wasn't who she was as an actress...
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't work. And if your family dynamic didn't work, I don't think those scenes would have worked at all for me.
Totally. Sarah, her name's Sarah Burkhalter, the actor. She's also an incredible actress. And I've actually known her since college. We went to college together.
Ah.
That was like, I kind of wrote that role knowing that she could pull it off, right? Like, in my head, I knew that, like, she was going to be the character even before I offered her the role.
So, you're a small independent production. Where did your mask come from? I did like the mask at the beginning. I thought that was kind of cute. I liked the family play there.
Yes,
the Halloween masks.
Yeah. So, that's actually, like, completely autobiographical. That's taken from my life. Like, my dad used to, like, scare... Can I curse on this?
Of course.
My dad used to scare the shit out of my sister and I when we were, like, super young. My mom wasn't really in on it. She was more like, she'd get flustered and, like, tell my dad not to scare us. But he was, like, a huge prankster. And masks were, like, a big thing for him, where he'd, like, hide in the dark wearing masks and try to, like, come out and scare us, you know, like, from our bedroom closet or, like, from his, like, dark, from some dark corner of the house, you know. So, yeah, that was totally – and, I mean, I think it, like, totally contributes to my dark sense of humor. I think I have, like – you know, like, I grew up, like, scared and then eventually found the humor in it, you know?
I do. That's good. I liked it. I thought it was really nice that they played with their kids because you don't see that a lot in films. You don't see parents playing with their kids. It's always the kid is shunned, the kid, you know what I mean? There's always an issue, but this family seemed like a real family. That's why I really liked it at times.
Are you a father yourself?
I have two children, yes. Okay. So I'm a firm believer if you have them, play with them.
Yeah.
I loved your musical choices for the film. Where did those come from? Because I thought it, again, everything, I think you blend very well as a filmmaker. You blended your cast. I thought your script worked well for your picking of the people. And I don't know if you, like you just told me, you wrote for them. So that makes a lot more sense to me. And I think your music, again, blends perfectly into everything. So where does that come from?
Thank you. I put a lot of thought into the music, right? Because I wanted to use it as an element to kind of bring in a little bit of this, like, Latin culture. But it's, like, very Latin American culture, right? They're, like, Latin performers that are living in the United States. So it has that kind of, like, mixed feeling in it. And I have to give some credit to one of our co-producers, Alex Maloney. He's just like a music genius. So he was like really helping me find these like songs, you know, like we went through a lot of different choices together, but like the opening song, for instance, which is Y La Bamba, that was a total find from him. And then the film where they're prepping for the surprise party, that's Diana Gameros, and she's like a local Bay Area musician as well, who's originally from Mexico. But Alex found her, and then I like listened to like her entire discography to like pick the right song for that moment.
Do you find it difficult to communicate with some?
The closing band is actually a band that I also went to college with, the Eastern Sea, and their music is beautiful.
So look at that. You get an actress from college, you get a band from college, so.
Yeah, you know.
I guess, do you keep like a folder or in your head, a file folder of people you know? Go, oh, I can use them later. I can use that later. Does that stay with you?
I guess there is like some sort of a memory warehouse, right? Where I keep all these things that I enjoy as an artist, you know, especially when it's like intimate people who have been in my life. And I don't think about it like consciously, like I'm going to use that for this, you know, but it's just something I can access from like real experience, you know? Matt Hines, who's like the lead singer and the manager of the band, the Eastern Sea at the end, is definitely also one of those people for me. He's just a talented musician, right? So I always like think about it. You know, there's been different phases of my life working on projects where I like fantasize about using his music as a soundtrack. And it was great to finally be able to do that.
You seem to use ice cream a lot in your film. Every time somebody's doing something involves ice cream. Now, I'm going to go ask about the ice cream, but I also have, who puts ice cream on waffles? Where does that come from?
Don't knock until you try it.
I've never tried it. So who likes ice cream on waffles?
It's delicious. Like, I mean, I guess it's like a waffle cone, but fluffy.
I guess so. So is this a personal, like, how much ice cream did you use? Because every time they're out for ice cream.
Yeah, a lot of ice cream, a lot of pancakes. There's also a lot of pancakes in that film. There was always, like, it was hard to shoot in the kitchen because the art department was always in the kitchen, like, cooking, like, one thing or another for this movie. There's definitely, like, a through line of food, for sure.
So I want to discuss the nickname Greasy. Where does that come from, or is this a name you made up?
I just made it up. Like, her name in the script, like, she's supposed to be Griselda, right?
Oh, okay.
That is shortened to Grease, and then in the banter that she has with her brother-in-law, he calls her Greasy, you know?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was perfect and Greasy. I mean, I totally let that go. I'm like, you know what? Makes sense to me.
Yeah. And he's kind of like a dick about it at times, right? He calls her, like, Grease Bag, I think, at one point in the movie.
Yes.
Ball.
He's after. When you have the present scene and she's sitting on the steps, your lead, people who open presents slowly, was that planned? Did you let it slowly just to irritate the other girl? Or you tell her, open that slowly?
When she's in the park. You mean
yes, opening. Oh, yeah, she's in the park opening her present.
Yeah. That's just like something that I used to do, I guess, and I don't do anymore. Like, the idea that you want to, like, save pretty wrapping paper was, like, a family thing, right? Where you're like, oh, we can reuse this, you know? Like, you kind of want to make sure that it's in good shape so you can use it again later.
So you don't think I pay attention to these things. I'm like, oh, that's a personal detail. I know it is, just by the way.
Totally.
I want to discuss the party scene. Is that like the whole team in the party scene?
That was all extras. The team was all working. There's a lot to do during that scene to like maintain, you know. We shot that scene. Like that scene was tough because we were also, I don't know if you know, it's like during the day and there's so many windows in that house and we were like running out of light, right? So the daylight was changing. So we were trying, we had lights outside trying to like, you know, so that you couldn't like tell the change, you know, while the day is actually changing.
I think you did a good job on your blocking and the way you shot it, because I really never really see a window. I see a straight shot, then you sort of curve over, he's in the thing, he's in the hallway. There's no real way to notice a light change, because I never see a window, really, other than on the side.
Well, actually, so one of the shots we had to, there's a lot of color correction that happened.
Okay, well then I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah exactly.
So, are you using a handheld camera at this point, or do you actually have it standard?
No, it's all handheld for the most part. Okay. We only use, the camera's only ever on sticks in the hospital.
And okay.
Kind of, that was also very intentional, to show the difference between the chaos of their life, you know, versus the hospital where she's in a coma and everything's very still and fragile, right?
So, when you're shooting the last scene and they're outside picking up stuff, are you handhelding that? That's not a stick shot?
The last scene?
On the car, when they stop the car and they get out.
Oh, that camera was on the ground.
Okay.
It was like on a sandbag or something.
Okay. I'm asking, because I'm like, that looks very still shot. So I'm like, I don't think she's moving.
Yeah, still, for sure.
So you don't think I pay attention, I know.
You for sure do.
How was working with children actors?
These kids were amazing. They were amazing. Poppy Sanchez, full name California Poppy Sanchez, was my 6-year-old. She actually turned 7 on set. And she was so talented. Like, she showed up off book. Like, I never had any problem, like, getting her to say her lines, you know? There's so many performances. Like, when she's, when the character of Robin, oh, I'm, like, gonna give spoilers to my own film right now. Let me backtrack how I'm gonna say that. There's a scene where, like, they're in, the mom is in bed with the kid.
Yep.
You know? That whole scene was just one shot, you know? And, like, her entire, like, performance in it, you know, is so, like, genuine and beautiful for the kid. I was like, oh, my God, how did I look out like this, you know? But she was amazing. And, like, when she wasn't on camera, she was, like, next to me almost the entire time, like, super curious about directing and wanting to watch it from the other side, you know? So she was great, yeah.
And the other kid?
Michaela, the other kid, she's like, so she's also amazing. Like, the nuance that she brought to, like, that a teenager going through that, you know? Like, her face is so expressive, and her delivery, that's not how she presents in real life. She's, like, a very outgoing, laughing kid, you know? So, like, the way that she, like, brought this, like, kind of teenage grunge to the character, like preteen grunge, you know, like an 11-year-old kind of going through something, I like really appreciated. I thought it was like,
I thought she was a little reserved for 11-year-old. I have an 11-year-old, and there's no way my kid behaves like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Are we already? Sorry, I'm going to go back to where I was. Sorry, I already discussed something I was about to check off, but we went through that earlier than I wanted to. It's all good. Locations is always an important thing for any filmmakers. The park location, your house, your hospital, let's go through them.
Okay. The house. So, we were looking for a house in the entire, where are you from? I don't know where you are.
I'm in Toronto, Canada, it's close enough. I'm just outside, but it's easier.
Okay, got it. Okay, so, I live in San Francisco. And one of the biggest problems that I had with the house for that, like, surprise party scene is that, like, San Francisco is full of Victorian houses, right? So when you open a door in the city, at most, like, 90% of the houses, it opens to a stairway or, like, a really thin hallway. And as you know, it's really important in the story for the house to open to a big open space, right? There's, like, that party scene, you know, there's, like, so much that happens. So that was, like, the main qualm in which we were looking for a location, right? It needed to happen. And, like, I hunted through, like, every, like, website that there is available to, like, rent spaces. And I think I found this guy at, yo, I love your house, but I don't need to rent it to, like, stay in it for a night, you know. I was like, I want to use it as a set. And we had a few conversations, and we had coffee, and I loved the house. It was so colorful. It's like an indie filmmaker's dream to have, like, you know, that much texture and color to, like, work in a space. And it had, like, a backyard, which is also very unheard of in the Bay Area. You know, it's, like, so small. One of the things that was, like, a surprise that we had to work around is he had, like, once I decided that I loved this house and I wanted to shoot in it for sure, I learned that there was, like, a chicken coop in the backyard. So there was, like, chickens, you know, and, like, a few of them were, like, free-range, kind of, like, running around the backyard. So that was, like, something that we needed to, like, take into consideration for our sound, you know? And when we were moving gear around at the backyard, you know, make sure you're not, like, accidentally running over a chicken, right? Or stepping on a chicken when you're moving around, like, heavy lights. And
How long did you use the house for? Because you use it for a lot of shots. You look like you're there for a while.
I think it's, like, 80% of the film is in the house. Yeah. So we shot the entire thing over 12 days.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm quite impressed.
Thank you. It was tough. but, yeah, we shot it over 12 days, and I want to say we were in the house for 8 days.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah, 8 days in the house.
So 8 days in the house, I would argue 2 to 3 days in the hospital, maybe?
2 days in the hospital.
Yeah, because I can just...
One day was all outdoors.
So you shot the park scene, the car scene the same day?
The what scene? The car scene and what scene?
The park scene.
We shot the park scene and the car scene where it was the at the end of the movie at the same day, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a busy day then.
That day went into the night because, like, the last... So our martini shot was the shot where the sister and the best friend are leaving the house.
Yes.
After the whole thing happened. That's like our martini shot.
Oh, I can... That's okay, because we don't really need any lighting or difference. That could happen any part during the day.
Totally.
I totally assumed that was supposed to happen first thing in the morning kind of thing, maybe for brunch, the way you set it up.
Yeah.
But it didn't. So how did you get a hospital location? You can rent a hospital room?
So we also lucked out with that because there's a hospital in Daly City, which is like 45 minutes away from the Bay Area, from San Francisco. And they were remodeling a wing. So they basically just let us use the entire space as long as we covered the security guard that was going to be there.
Seems fair.
It was a great deal. Like, we had access to everything we wanted, like all of their knickknacks and, you know, machines, computers, everything.
So I have your maid comes back, she opens the fridge, and there's a ton of food in the fridge. Mm-hmm. So where's the food come from? Who made it? Is that catering, or is that just somebody brought it in?
Like, who made it in real life?
Yes, that thing is, like, stacked.
Yeah, so a lot of it was actually prop food that we had cooked throughout, right? Because there's so much cooking involved in the film. And then a lot of it was, like, just leftovers from our own food, like from lunch catering. Dinner, like, whatever was left over, our department would grab it and try to, like, make it look like a home-cooked meal and then put it in.
Oh, yeah, because it's full, that fridge. It's completely packed.
For sure, yeah.
So, how was catering? Did you find a good caterer? Was that difficult?
So, in the amazing world of supporting the indie film community, we actually got sponsored by almost all local restaurants that were in the area. Our executive producer, Natalie Keneally, like, that was one of the points that she made, that she, like, thought that, you know, she could make that happen for us. So she reached out to, like, a bunch of restaurants, and almost every day was a different local restaurant that sponsors the film. So the food was amazing. It was, like, delicious, you know, every day something totally different. And we ended up saving, like, a bunch of money on that, right? It was, like, 12 days worth of food.
That's awesome. I think that's really exciting.
Same. Yeah, there's like a restaurant, I feel like I shouldn't name drop restaurants because then I'm going to have to name drop all
yes.
of them. but one of them, like, the family ended up coming and they were extras in the film, in the surprise party scene.
Oh, like, there you go.
The owner's owners of the restaurant were like extras in the surprise party scene. Yeah.
Well, if they listen to this, they'll know who they are. We can just let it go. You have a dead animal. What really was your dead animal?
That was for sure a dead animal, but it was like, it was what they call it, what did my art department call it? Low budget taxidermy, where it was just the skin of a dead animal. And they stuffed it and sewed it back together.
I was trying to figure out, did she find a dead animal on the ground, or where did this come from?
No, it was rebuilt.
So, you said you fundraised this film. Did you go through Indiegogo, or did you do, I can't even think of the other one off the top of my head, but you know where I'm going. How did you fundraise?
We actually did fundraising through Seed and Spark.
I've never heard of that.
All right, I can talk forever about Seed and Spark because I love them so much. So Seed and Spark is fundraising. It's a crowdfunding platform that is exclusively for filmmakers. And they also do, they also have like a side streaming service that is like smaller and is starting to grow. But like Seed and Spark is amazing because it has like a built-in community and they kind of like double help you out. So one, you're like fundraising for whatever amount you want to meet. But, like for us, it was 20K. But on the Seed and Spark end, if you get followers, you can unlock perks for them with them. So, like, if you get 250 followers, you start unlocking different stuff. Like, for instance, DCP is, like, the new – do you know what a DCP is? It's, like, a very specific hard drive that now is where you put your films on 4K to project them in theaters, right? Like, before it was Blu-ray was the big thing, and now, like, most festivals – if we want to have any sort of theatrical release, only accept DCP.
It's
super expensive. It's expensive and it's a pain in the ass to do. But Seed and Spark has like a partnership with DCP. So DCP does like the actual conversion of the film for free. And then they do your first like 10 deployments for free if you're crowdfunding through Seed and Spark. So something
deployment.
So that would be like $500 already, you know? And then they have, like, a ton of partnerships with film festivals. So I get waivers for a bunch of film festivals. The end crawl of the film is also, there's, like, a company called End Crawl that will put your logos and does it for you. Like, most independent films use End Crawl. And they also have a partnership with Seed and Spark. So we got that for, like, 50% off. So it's just, like, you know, it's aside from, like, the money that you're already making by crowdfunding, there's like all these extra perks that end up saving you like thousands and thousands of dollars through fundraising with them.
So are you suggesting that people should go through this instead of doing Indiegogo and the other one I can't remember?
Times a million. Okay. I would go through them. Not only that, but like when you're starting off, like somebody works with you, it's like they're a small team and like beyond a human interaction, like you submit your project and you get feedback on it, you know? They're like, this is going to go well, this is not, your video needs to be shorter, or, you know, if you switched it, phrased it this way, it would work better, you know, so they'll give you, like, feedback because they want, you know, projects to be successful.
So I guess my big question is, your film is done, do they watch your film at the end?
Who, Seed and Spark?
Yes.
I mean, they don't have to at all, but one of their head of crowdfunding actually came to Cinequest where we premiered. He flew in from LA to watch, because there was like something like 5 or 8 films that had been funded on Seed and Spark that were premiering at Cinequest. So he just came to check them out. So he was there for mine.
Oh, cool. Premiere.
Yeah, and I think that they have a bunch of films at Tribeca right now, and like the CEO of Seed and Spark went out to Tribeca to support those films. So yeah, they're like very involved in the film community.
So your film is done. Did you take it on? Is it currently on, I guess, the film festival circuit now?
Yeah, the film festival circuit, yeah.
So are you traveling with the film?
So far, well, right now it's at Julian Dubuque Film Festival, which is like a film festival in Iowa. And Molly, who plays Greasy in the film, is there with Gavin Murray, who was the DP of the film. He's also one of the associate producers. So... yeah, I mean, we premiered in March, like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, so
it's like brand new for the film festival circuit. But I'm for sure planning on traveling with it. Let me know if there's any film festivals in your area, and I'll submit it, try to get in.
I'll see what I can do. You ready for some fun questions?
Yeah.
I'll give you the easy one first. Your favorite film?
Of all time?
Sure. You can have 5, 3, 10. I am really not fussy.
My favorite film is Reality Bites. I've watched it like hundreds of thousands of times, and Winona Ryder is like the love of my life.
So if somebody came over and they had never seen Reality Bites, you'd go, okay, that's what we're watching tonight, and throw that on?
For sure. I love Reality Bites. Great movie.
Okay, I figure I have to ask your favorite ice cream flavor, because this whole film is ice cream, ice cream, ice cream.
I don't have, like, a specific ice cream flavor, but I like them to have, like, stuff in it, like chocolate or peanut butter chunks or whatever. I like my ice cream chunky.
So, where I live, we have a place that actually adds things to the ice cream. So you get a basic chocolate, but they'll add a Butterfingers, Smarties, like Reese's Peanut Butter. Yes, they'll mix it in for you.
I love that stuff, for sure.
Sorry, I'm trying to, now I remember. Your favorite place to visit in San Francisco?
My favorite place to visit in San Francisco? Like for people coming to the city for the first time?
Yes. Where would you tell them to go?
I usually tell people to go to North Beach because it's beautiful. There's like open space, you know, and it's a combination of like our Little Italy, and there's also like this beatnik culture that still exists from like back in the day, you know. A lot of old school cafes that are still pretty affordable, you know. There's this big open plaza space where you can sit.
I have a question. Is that near Hoyt Tower, or am I in the wrong place? Totally.
What'd you say?
I think I was at Hoyt Tower. I think, or Hoyt Tower. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And it seemed very similar to that area that you were describing.
Yeah, it's really close.
Okay, so I must have been there. I just don't remember because I was just wandering around.
Yeah.
Okay, so nobody can find your film, but I know you have other films you could promote at this point.
I mean, I would love it if people followed us on social media because they will be able to find the film eventually.
Okay, so let's do your social media now and where they can find your other films.
Okay, great. So Bring Me an Avocado is on Twitter, @ Bring Me Avocado. It's on Instagram, @ Bring Me Avocado. And it's on Facebook as well. And yeah, we're like right just kicking off our festival circuit. So, you know, we might be.
Hang on. Before I let you go, you have three other films you could talk about. Tell them where they can find those.
Which one specifically?
Oh, I don't have my computer. I'm sorry. You had some other stuff on your IMDb.
One of them isn't online right now, but I have a bunch of short films that can be found on my website. And, like, my other feature isn't online at the moment. And my website is Maria Mealla, MEALLA.com.
I'm trying to help you here. That's all I'm doing is promoting you. Get it out there. Well, thank you for your time. You were awesome. I hope you had fun.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was totally fun. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.